What's up, everybody? You're listening to your favorite podcast, the best in the world, which is Far Corner Podcast, and welcome to the latest episode of it. So, Josh, how are you doing? I don't need to ask that question because after the mutilation and weakness yesterday, like, I feel you've been castrated because
wait, what is this about? Is this about me losing 4-2 in one single game of FIFA? Just 4-2.
Okay, for our listeners, to give you guys context, yeah. So you guys know how Josh is always bragging about FIFA beating whoever, he will trash whoever.
Always bragging.
So yesterday, I witnessed a mutilation, a decimation of Joshua. And do you know what's funny? It was a disabled kid that beat him. Wait, let me finish. With all due respect, I'm not trying to laugh at disabled people. But my point is, this guy was actually, he has a defect. He's not seeing properly, and I think he has a leg problem as well. So with all those disabilities, you can clearly see that this guy is at a disadvantage with playing against Joshua, who always claimed that he's supreme. So, and this guy still trashed Joshua. There was even a point where the guy had to even look away from the TV, and he was still trashing Joshua. So, well, that is Joshua for you, always bragging and end up giving you zero output, you know? So, congratulations to the guy that won him. That's nice.
Okay. First of all, I don't get why you're lying.
Secondly,
the person I played is our friend, like both of us know him, but you're even closer to him. I might even mention his name, but no need. He's your close friend and he's my friend, but like I said, you're closer to him than me. And me and you know that this guy has no disability. So I don't get why you're coming on the podcast.
Let me ask you. Was he not using glasses?
Is that a disability?
Wait, it's a yes or no question. Was he not using glasses?
Meaning he can see well with his glasses.
No, that is not the question. Was he not using glasses?
Yes, he was.
Okay, so there was pause coming out from this guy's eye because he like I said, he has a defect. So this guy with all those problems, he was still able to trash you. Like, I don't know. Say, let's just move on. Let's not drag your embarrassment on the podcast.
What was his call line?
Huh? I can't remember, but I know he trashed you. That's what
4-2. So it wasn't a trash. And then okay. I don't know why you left. Like, immediately you saw me losing that match, you were just happy and you left. And you went home. You didn't see me trash someone. I won someone 11-3. And you can ask.
There's no need to ask because we can make up something. As far as I was not there, you can make up whatever you want to make up.
Why would I make up the exact scoreline 11-3? I did not say I won 14-0. I did not say I won 11-0. I said 11-3. Why would I make up that exact
Okay, let me make up my own scoreline. I won 6-2, but it was in my dream on PS5. I was playing somebody. So let's keep going like that. Since we're being shameless. Okay. No problem. Let's just move on.
I don't blame me. It's Barcelona I blame. Or rather, it's very much blame for capitulating against Barcelona. That game, yeah?
Yeah, let's go.
It was shameful, it was disgraceful, it was awful, and I'll just say that you expect a performance in Clasico. There was nothing. Real Madrid didn't even turn up. They were not even on the pitch.
The truth is, like Xavi Hernandez said, he said Barca were expecting a better fight. Like, he was expecting the game to be a lot harder.
That's pride. He needs to pipe down and be humble.
No. The truth is, like, you just said it now, so I don't understand how it is pride. Now you just said
it's
it now.
Right. No, there are some things you don't say in the press. Why would you say he was expecting a tough game? That doesn't come out right to me.
Okay, no problem, no problem, no problem. Let's just leave it that way. But he said that. And me, I'm looking at it like Barca could have actually... The thing is, the difference between Barcelona and Real Madrid is when Real Madrid are on top of their game, they are very clinical. So, for example, if Barcelona... If we were to flip the script and say Real Madrid had the kind of performance Barcelona had, Real Madrid would be giving Barcelona something like a 7 because they don't have any sympathy. But I don't know, Barcelona out there casually missing chances and, you know, doing some kind of nonsense. But at the end of the day, I feel like a lot of Real Madrid fans will say it's missing Benzema that actually made the result to turn out that way. But I actually feel like, yes, there's a truth in that. But I feel like Ancelotti is who to blame here. I've never seen your two central midfielders play as a point.
We'll come to Ancelotti now. That's a special case. That's a disgrace, what he did. You mentioned Benzema. First of all, I don't want to hear that nonsense from anybody's mouth that if Benzema was on the pitch, Madrid would have won. Is Benzema now a magician or is he a miracle worker? Has he opened a church somewhere that I don't know about? With what I saw, Benzema would not have helped them to win the game. Maybe the scoreline would have been less, yes, but they wouldn't have won the game with that nonsense. And I don't know, for Ancelotti, you were alluding to that fact that Ancelotti did one of the worst things I've seen this season from any coach. Now, honorable mentions to Pochettino for not taking him off against Real Madrid. And also honorable mention to Thomas Tuchel for bringing on Kepa in the...
You forgot an honorable mentions to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as well, one of the worst. But still,
I'm looking at specific incidents. Okay, honorable mention to Solskjaer for losing 4-1 to Watford. But still, all these things are nothing compared to playing Toni Kroos and Luka Modric as first line. Now, I don't understand. Please, someone should explain to me how somebody can even think of it. Modric is arguably the best midfielder in the world, and you decide, no, I don't want to control the midfield. I want to waste him up front.
The thing is, the tactics was all wrong. And one thing, I don't like criticizing managers like Ancelotti, because when you look at their track record is very good. But when you look at the setup was wrong. Vinicius, we could not see Vinicius. Oh, obviously, Araujo had a very good game, so Vinicius was out of the game. But still, like the place, when you play 4-4-2 and your two best midfielders are the ones up front, then Vinicius is part of the structure to form the diamond. So, like, I'm just looking at it like, man, the setup is all wrong. And Vinicius has to now start from midfield to run. You know, like, obviously, he changed it in the second half. Immediately changed it. Barcelona got their fourth goal. He went to three at the back. And immediately, Barcelona got their fourth goal. So, like, I don't know. Ancelotti was not at it tactically in that game. Xavi outsmarting. And I just feel like for that kind of performance, looking at the way Barca press, they got their tactics right. You know, Josh, we've criticized Eric Garcia. I would like to you when the lineup came out. I was like, "What is Garcia doing here?"
Wait. Where are you going? You want to praise him?
No, because when you look at Garcia, was one of the best players on the pitch.
How much defending did he actually have to do?
Okay. Yes, we can say he had little to do defensive wise, but I'm telling you, one of the reasons why Real Madrid struggled defensively was because of Garcia. His distribution was supreme. Like, I'll even give you an incident. There was one where I think Aubameyang missed the chance. Real Madrid were pressing. There was no way out. Before then, Dembele made a good run. Dembele was frustrated that Garcia didn't give him the pass. Garcia gave him a sign and said, "Don't worry, I'll give you the pass next." The next thing, it wasn't like in the split second, like in two, three occasions where Real Madrid tried to press, all of a sudden there was a long ball that took the entire Real Madrid team out of the game.
I want to now ask you. So now, because of one good good, in fact, I can't even say good performance. One decent performance against a non-existent Real Madrid attack. Does that make Eric Garcia the heir to Pique? Like they don't.
No. That's not what I said. That's not what I said. I'm just saying that Eric Garcia had a good game, and me, I'm humble enough to say I got it wrong when I saw the lineup because I was criticizing him starting, and Xavi obviously thought that he could be useful on the ball, and eventually he was right because he was one that made a lot of damage to Real Madrid's backline with all these
injuries. Was Sergino Dest injured?
Yeah, Dest was injured. He pulled his hamstring against Galatasaray.
Okay, thank you. That's the only reason Garcia was on that pitch. Because Araujo would have played centre back, Dest would have played right back. So even Xavi knows that Garcia is not the long term solution. Thank you very much.
Well, you and I, your Garcia agenda. No problem. Let's move on.
I don't gas all players after one match. What is this?
Me, you should know I don't do that, but me, I'm humble enough to give credit where credit is due. Obviously, if Garcia makes errors against, I'm going to watch the international fixtures coming up in the Spain's friendlies and stuff, even in the next few games. I will criticize him because that is how it is. You need to be consistent as a footballer, and I value consistency over anything else.
Barcelona should have won. I don't know. Obviously, you agree with me because of your allegiances. Barcelona should have won like 7 or 8-0. Aubameyang scored 2 goals but was wasteful. Ferran Torres, for me, should not be starting for Barcelona. I've said this time without number. Ferran Torres should be on the bench. I'm happy with Dembele and Adama.
I disagree. No, I disagree with that. Okay. Let me ask you one question. Let me ask you one question. Tell me what Ferran Torres is doing wrong. Just in a simple sentence.
He's wasteful. He's wasting chances.
So apart from being wasteful, wait. The question is coming. The question is coming. Now, take away that being wasteful. It's cool. I know he's being wasteful. I'm not going to disagree. But is he not ticking every box right?
I want to ask you one question before I answer your question. What's the most important for? Is he putting back ball in the back of the net or not? What is the most important thing?
He's putting the ball in the back of the net. That's the truth.
If he's doing the most important thing wrongly, so why is he on the pitch?
No. That's not... See, you're taking one facet to something. I'm taking it combined. If you take it... Like, let me give you an example. Ferran Torres has had a GA of 10. That is not a bad start. But when you now watch those games individually... I've criticized him. You know me now. I've criticized him on this podcast. When you look at those games specifically, he has missed a lot of chances. But when you now look at it, he's still scoring. He's still assisting. So, when you look at it, you cannot bench that kind of player.
Okay. First of all, I did not know Barcelona was a daycare, not a football club, that they have to be... They have to babysit Ferran Torres for his confidence not to reduce, because if you bench him, you're going to hurt his feelings. He's going to cry. Secondly...
No. That's not what I said.
Wait. Secondly, it is not Muppets. They are not toys on the bench for Barcelona. We're talking about Memphis Depay. We're talking about Adama Traoré. Memphis is a better finisher than Ferran Torres. And Memphis... He's not a stranger to creating chances for his teammates. Yeah? I'm not going to believe that Memphis will be worse in this Barcelona lineup. Nobody's going to convince me that
no, Memphis. No. I'm not going to say Memphis will be worse. But when you look at it, what Ferran Torres offers is greater than what Memphis offers right now in this team.
You know what I'm waiting for? For Barcelona to lose a game because Ferran Torres wasted like 2 or 3 chances, then
it has happened. Like it has not happened
because they've been winning even when he has.
No. Against Espanyol, I criticized him when we drew that game. When we drew that game, it was because of him we drew that game. Against Napoli's first leg, He could have gotten an hat trick easily.
Not painful. Maybe if you lose in the Europa League to Frankfurt and you crash out, you know how embarrassing that would be. Then you will come and criticize him. What you're doing is just tapping.
Do I see it? No.
What you're doing is you're tapping. Tell him don't do it again. Yeah.
No. That's not me now. You know this now. Like the way I see it is very simple. At the end of the day, every other aspect of his game is spot on. The only thing that is missing now is being clinical. And it's not like he's not scoring. He's still scoring, but he's not being clinical. And I feel that I feel like that can be corrected over time. His finishing can be corrected over time. But at this point in time, the people that you're talking about benching him, they're not better than Ferran Torres. That is what I would say to that.
The only thing that is wrong with Timo Werner is his finishing. And we've seen where his career is heading. The only thing that has been wrong with Lukaku this season is his finishing. We have seen where his season is heading. And so let the only thing that is wrong with Ferran Torres be his finishing. And we'll talk in 1 year's time if he does not improve this finishing.
He will improve it. I think
guarantee that he will improve it. He has to improve it. But no.
See, you know the kind of player Ferran Torres is like. I've seen that kind of thing. When for example, it's still 1-0, like there's too much pressure. But I think when Barcelona is cruising, that pressure to just be clinical, be ruthless. I feel like if Barcelona has another clinical person within the ranks, so maybe someone like Fati. When someone like Fati is there, it will relieve that pressure on him to always be the
best man. Of all, if Fati comes back, Ferran Torres is going to the bench, like straight up.
You're on this bench thing. We will see. There's still room for Ferran Torres to play in the other wing, Dembele being on the bench. You have Fati, Ferran Torres, and Aubameyang.
Dembele on the bench. I'm done with. I'm not even saying anything again. I'm done with this Ferran Torres conversation. Dembele on the bench for Ferran Torres. It's okay. Always my own. How do you think Messi would have been feeling watching that match? Would he have been proud of the team, or would he be sad that he's missing out on it?
I think Messi would be proud of what the team has achieved, because obviously Messi has been saying for years, like, not really directly say, but when we watch Barcelona, even now, even if you're in neutral, you can clearly see that Messi has been let down so many times by not having the right team, the right manager, and the right squad to actually compete for things. But if you look at this team is missing like a superstar to actually say Barcelona can compete against the likes of Liverpool and Bayern.
What you just said now, the team, Messi was saying that he didn't have a team. Trick question, it might sound like, but would this team have done what they did if Messi was on the pitch? I'm asking this question because we know it was all balls to Messi. Would Pedri have the same freedom? Would Dembele have the same freedom? Would Ferran Torres have the same freedom? Do you think that Barcelona now are even better without Messi? Or not better without Messi, but like it's good that they let Messi go because now they can start the first generation.
I agree. I agree that it's good that they let Messi go. But when you look at it, if you have a proper manager, like I'll give you an example. Under Ernesto Valverde, it was all balls to Messi. But if you look at the way Xavi tries to play, like he's trying to make sure that there's different situations, different avenues to their attack.
That's because there's no Messi for him to say all balls.
That's what I'm saying. It won't be all balls to Messi. It won't be all balls to Messi.
I don't know that because he never coached Messi, right?
We can never know that too. You can't say it will be all balls to Messi. And I can't say it won't be all balls to Messi. We can never know that. But one thing that I know for sure is that if Messi was in this team, Barcelona would be very, very clinical. They could have actually scored that 7 that you're talking about against Real Madrid.
Okay. Now, are Barcelona back? Because we keep hearing it in the Spanish media. We keep hearing it from Barcelona fans on social media. But do you think Barcelona are back?
I would say, like, obviously, there might be a bit of bias there because I have allegiance to Barcelona. But I would say Barcelona, like, I like... Let me say Barcelona are very good now. But you know me, you know my ambition. I feel like for Barcelona,
yes or no?
No, wait now. Hear me. I feel like Barcelona just five signings away from saying we're back. Just five signings away.
Five, that's half of the team. That means you don't hate the team.
No. What I mean is that, obviously, you've criticized Garcia. Me too, I don't have confidence in him. If Barcelona can get a centre-back, a Daniel Vest long-term replacement, and a left-back that can compete with Alba, then a striker to build the team. Obviously, my first choice would be Haaland, but if we can't get him, we need a striker, a deadly striker that can we can build the team around. Then the fifth signing. Aubameyang is 30-year-old already, and he can't be the long-term replacement. I think Aubameyang, after next season, Barcelona will be looking to ship him out. It just depends. But me, I feel like the fifth
he's
signing.
He's on dump. Is that
Let's not do that. This is not a girlfriend kind of situation. So the fifth signing, I think Barcelona will not get that fifth signing in the transfer market. That fifth signing has to come from La Masia. They have to groom someone that will take that position from Busquets long term. They have to groom someone because when you look at this,
No. Nico is already there, is he not? They don't need to look for each person.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So Nico, if they can groom Nico, if Nico cannot do that, they now need to go in their ranks, because you and I know this. We even talked about it yesterday. You and I know this. Barcelona's DM position is one of the most important positions, because they actually build from that position. That is a very pivotal position. So they need someone that knows how to play that position.
Frankie, is he not capable of sitting deep like in his Ajax days?
Yeah, he's capable of it, but I don't think he can play it. Like, I think if you play Frankie there, you're limiting his natural.
I don't have the discipline to just sit back.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you look at Frankie, he has been involved in Barcelona's chance creation when they give him the ball. Especially, I don't know if you can remember the third goal, the build up to the third goal. You could see his athleticism driving with the ball. You can see the way he built that attack, passing the ball to Aubameyang, to Dembele, but Aubameyang backing to Ferran Torres, and boom, they scored. Those are Frankie's game, to always back up play and be the third man that's always free. So I think he should be limiting his ability if you put him in that situation.
So for me, all I heard now is that you are calling this team trash. They won Real Madrid 4-0, and you are saying that they need five players, which is actually unbelievable to my ears. Five new players after such a performance. Wow. Thank the Barcelona players, thank you for the vote of confidence.
No. We're talking about templates. The templates there is Bayern, Man City, Liverpool. So for us to get to go on.
Okay, so the reason I asked that question about Barcelona back, because I've been seeing nonsense everywhere. I've been listening to radio, Barcelona fans are shouting, we're back. Back to what?
Because the way
I look at it is, the Barcelona I grew up watching was in the top three teams in the world. You had Barcelona, you had Real Madrid, you had Bayern, then you had the rest, four teams. So the rest, one year it will be Man U that will be the fourth best team. The other year it will be Chelsea. The next year it will be Juventus. But the top three always remain the top three. And now, because Barcelona won 4-0 in the Clásico, they are saying Barcelona are back. Back to what? Because they are not better than City now. They are not better than Liverpool. They are not better than Bayern. They are not better than Chelsea. They are not better than PSG. They're not even better than the Real Madrid that they beat 4-0, because over the course of the season, you can look at the table and see that. So I've mentioned six teams that are better than Barcelona. So by that standard, Barcelona are not yet back. But they can be back next season. So I'm not saying that it's not possible, but right now, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Okay, before we move on, let me ask you a question. So is it now safe to say Xavi is proving you wrong because you were on his case when they signed him.
What do you mean by proving me wrong? What did I said? I said, I don't know why you're like
this. No. Go on, because the recordings are there. Go on. Let me hear what you said.
I said that the way the team is in turmoil, that the next Barcelona coach to me looks programmed to fail because the club itself is in turmoil. I said whether that be Xavi or any other person.
Okay. That's what I said.
Let me continue. That the person was programmed to fail this season. That this season will not amount to anything. That's what I said.
Okay. And but you also said that Xavi is inexperienced. He's inexperienced and he's not ready for the job. Okay.
Calm down.
All right. Go on.
I said that this season will not amount to anything, but that a good coach will be able to start building something from next season, and then we'll really see the progress in two seasons from now. I said it.
Okay.
Then I also said what you're hinting at, which is the only thing you're interested in.
The issue is you're not humble enough to just say, okay, I might be wrong about this guy. That is just the issue.
I'm coming there, my guy. You said that I said, which I actually said, that Xavi was inexperienced. Xavi was not ready for the job.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I said is still in line with my first statement of the new Barcelona coach cannot achieve anything this season. So please tell me what Barcelona are going to achieve this season and tell me I was wrong. Because I never said Xavi will fail. I said Xavi will fail this season before we start seeing what is working on next season and upper season. So please, can you tell me what
bottom line is
4-0 El Clasico at Bernabeu. Is that the trophy?
That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about progress in the way they play with the everything that was seen so far since January up to this point. Wait now, that's up to this point. So now, but it's clear that you're not humble enough to just say, okay, I might be wrong about this guy. So it's cool. No problem. You're not wrong. You're always correct. So it's cool. I just quickly before we move away from Spain, I just want to highlight something. So I saw a stat before we came on air. It's a very, very interesting stat. I think it's something worth just talking about, even if it's for a minute. So Cholo Simeone, and that's Diego Simeone. There was this report I was reading that when the fixtures were going bad, the owners of the club had a meeting with him, and when he had that meeting, they tried to understand what is going wrong with the club and all of that. And they now told Simeone after the meeting that, look, we trust you, and we're giving you your full backing. I think the sporting director, so I can't remember clearly, but he went to the dressing room to address the players and told them that, look, we don't know what is going, because we were hearing João Félix was unhappy with the manager, Suarez was unhappy with the manager, we're hearing the... So they're like, look, you guys should wake up because we fully back the manager. And Simeone was even like, look, all you are players, I'll be here longer before you guys. And since then till now, Atleti has played 6 games, scored 15 goals, conceded 5 goals, and they've kept 3 clean sheets. And in those 6 games, they've not drawn anyone, they've not lost any, they've won all 6 of them. So now, the question now is, Josh, do you think Simeone will get sacked? Because we are on this guy's case, like 6 weeks ago.
You see the thing is, Simeone has so much bank. It's just like, I know it shouldn't be the case where a manager is so great and then... So it's just like how sacking Mourinho was a very difficult decision for Chelsea because of what he has done. But it comes to a stage where you're like, this guy cannot move us forward. So what I'm going to say is, to answer your question, they will not sack Simeone because he has that much credit in the bank. But for Atletico Madrid to go to the next stage, I think they should move on. But they will not see it that way. They will look at it as this guy brought us from nothing to competing and actually winning two titles in the space of a decade. But for them to actually now be outmuscle Barcelona and Real Madrid, they need to play a more progressive and more expansive style of football. Why? Simply because you can only beat the smaller teams more regularly if you're attack-minded. You can beat the big teams playing like Simeone, all well and good. You can win the Madrid derby once in a while. You can win against Barcelona. You can win even Bayern Munich in the Champions League. But you see all those Levante, Osasuna, Mallorca, those are the people that will frustrate you and you will not be consistent playing like Simeone does. So they should pick their poison.
Well said, well said. I can't even add to that. That's top notch. Yeah, let's just move on. Well said.
Thank you very much. I learned from you, sir. Another thing, I don't want people to think I'm proud. I'm not proud, but I'm not wrong about Xavi, so I cannot admit to being
I don't
wrong.
Know why we are bringing the Xavi. Just let's move on. Have some shame. Let's move on.
Okay, in the Premier League, we saw Arsenal beat Aston Villa. It wasn't an exciting game per se, but Arsenal grinding out the result like they needed to. I think it shows character for them to bounce back from the Liverpool disappointment, because some players will just feel, you know, there's this inferiority complex that can come to losing against the same team over and over again. They'll just feel like they are nothing. But they've accepted that Liverpool are better than them, but then they can be better than the rest.
Yeah, like I was watching I was watching the Villa game, and I can say that for the first time, I think Arsenal now have that, what is it called? Resilience, like they can actually do this top four thing that we've been talking about for months, because they for them to see out that 1-0 victory, like, man, kudos to them. Like I think for majority of the game, Arsenal were safe. There was no point where I was thinking, oh, they might actually bottle this. Like, that is very unusual. But normally when I watch Arsenal, especially when they have a slim lead.
I think that was more on Villa's lack of effort, if you ask me. Because even Gerrard said they were too passive, especially in the first half.
Yeah. Of course, like, the setup, I don't understand what Coutinho, Watkins was doing. But I think when Danny Ings came on, they looked a bit better. Danny Ings was making some kind of runs that was causing some kind of problems for the Arsenal backline, but still, they were still able to cope with it. So I think Arsenal, they are in a very good place. Like Arteta and his boys, they are in a good place. And I just want to tell the listeners, if you want to see a very fun interview, you should go and watch Steven Gerrard's press conference afterwards. It was very, very fun to watch. even the journalist was like, "You're being aggressive." And Gerrard was like, Gerrard was like, "No, I'm not being aggressive. It was like if your players were aggressive as you are towards me, I'm not sure they will lose the game." Like, it was entertaining. I think you guys should watch it.
Yeah, okay, so for me, this is on Gerrard. I say it's on Gerrard because actually I would have made the same mistake Gerrard made. And what was the mistake? Aston Villa have been playing well recently, playing Ings and Watkins as a pair up front with Coutinho in behind and Buendia on the bench. But then because they were playing against Arsenal, he felt like two strikers would be too attacking and he wanted more control. So he put Buendia in place of Ings. That was the mistake. That made them have less bite up front because Buendia doesn't work as hard off the ball like as Ings, although Ings is the striker. So maybe he should be the lazier person, but he's not. So, I think that was actually the key thing. Like you said, Ings came and the game changed a bit. It didn't change like in Villa's favor, but at least we could see some effort. But like I said, I would have made the same mistake and bench one striker. So, like, I can't blame him too much for it. Sometimes you have to show the big six respect, but sometimes it now becomes too much respect.
Yeah. I think it's a learning curve for Stevie G, and I know he'll be a good manager because I like I've seen some promise already from the Villa team, so I think he'll get it right in the next time.
Tottenham won West Ham 3-1. And I just want to say God bless Harry Kane, because he was the only person in my FPL team that did not blank this week. I had only 6 players out, which was terrible. It was supposed to be 9, but Dinier was injured. Ramsdale was injured, which I'm not buying whatsoever. I think they just don't want him to play for England because it's friendly matches. And Rafinha had COVID. Kane 3 assists. This guy is more than a number 9. He's like 9.5. He's like number 9 and 10 at the same time.
We're seeing Kane back to his best, which is nice to see. Like, obviously, it was frustrating for us to be watching Kane with his poor performances week in, week out earlier on the season. But now Kane is back to his best. And I think it bodes well to Antonio Conte's management. And it also, you can also say that Antonio Conte needs this kind of Kane to actually make sure that they can charge Arsenal for that top 4 race. And it's good to see. It was all in all, the match was entertaining to watch. Kane and Son once again extending the record of them assisting and having goal combinations with each other. So now it looks like they've shattered that Frank Lampard. And
they should win a trophy, please. I'm not interested in that. They should win a trophy. if we're both in agreement that Arsenal are favorites for top 4, I suppose the team that will push them the closest.
Yeah. If they can stay consistent, the factor, because we've seen this kind of things from Spurs. This week they are playing well. The next week they go and lose 1-0 to nobody.
Their form for a long time was win lose. It was ridiculous.
Exactly. So if they can put string up back to back wins, then you can now say they are like the contenders for that spot too, alongside Arsenal. But right now, I'm not too confident about it, but we'll see in the coming weeks.
Well, you know the interesting thing about this top 4 is, yeah?
Yeah.
I can bet everything I own that all the teams in the top 4 race are going to drop points in more than one match for the rest of this season. So Arsenal are going to drop points in at least 2 matches, same with Spurs, same with United. So who is actually going to be most consistent? I don't think Arsenal are actually a shoo-in for the position. They are favorites, but I would also not bet on them.
The reason why I don't even want to look at United is when you look at their fixtures, especially next when April starts, man, it's ridiculous. They face all the big teams. Like, they're going to face all the big teams. All of them. So it's ridiculous. So they've already started. They faced what is it called? They faced Manchester City already. Manchester City won the game, as we know. What is it called? They were meant to face Arsenal this weekend, but it was postponed. So, you know, like, it was shifted because I think...
saw Arteta crying that they're asking his boys to play Wednesday and Saturday. It just a disgrace for a manager in the league of a top club to be saying that you cannot play Wednesday and Saturday.
At the end of the day, that's the nonsense we're seeing. Antonio Conte had to even attack him, but
that he cancelled because of COVID.
exactly. But nevertheless, I just feel like from now to the end of the season, like Man U has a very, very tough run of fixtures. So it just depends on who can stay consistent enough. I think this is Arsenal's top 4 to lose. This is their best opportunity to get it.
We saw FA Cup action this weekend, the quarterfinals, and now we've seen the lineup for the last 4, the semis, Crystal Palace, Chelsea, Man City and Liverpool. You mentioned Gerrard's post-match interview being interesting. How about Frank Lampard this weekend? Because this guy carried all his players and just threw them under the bus, clean. Like, he did not even hesitate. He said that that his players lack character, that basically they are cowards, and that they stopped playing to instruction after 20 minutes. Like, I don't know what they did for 70 minutes. Do you think this can... Well, first of all, do you think this is the right approach? Because people have criticized Mourinho for always doing this in the press. But now, because he's Lampard and he's English and then he was a great player, everybody is keeping quiet. Nobody is saying, why is he doing like this to his players? Do you think it's a good thing, or is he wrong to do this in the press?
Exactly, it's a very terrible thing. I don't see Gary Neville criticizing Lampard now because he's one of their party. But if it's Mourinho that does it, they will criticize him. They want to crucify him. But well, Lampard is copying Mourinho. He thinks he has the ability of Mourinho, but it's just like when they say ability, and the true ability and what they think their ability is. So you get Frank Lampard's ability. He's thinking his ability is Mourinho, but he doesn't know that his ability is even worse than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. So like, the truth is, at the end of the day, what he said won't. It's not necessarily going to affect them because they're already out of the FA Cup, but it could impact the players in the sense of our manager doesn't trust us and doesn't believe in us. And that kind of thing can actually mess them up in the league. So, but the thing is, now there's an international break, so now they can regroup and start building forward. Because when you look at it, that's one of the reasons why I'm saying Lampard actually set a record and be the first manager to relegate Everton. If you quickly go and check Everton's fixtures, it is crazy. It is crazy. like even I'm not sure any amount of prayer.
Have you seen Newcastle's fixtures as well? Newcastle should just be thanking God that they had that run, because I can tell you now that Newcastle will go on another bad run. So they are still not out of the woods yet.
Okay, for our listeners, let me just call the fixture quickly. I know there is no time. But after the international breaks end, Everton is going to face West Ham. Next, they face Burnley. Next, they face Manchester United. After that, they face Leicester. After that, we have the Merseyside Derby. They face Liverpool. Then after Liverpool, they face Chelsea. After Chelsea, they face Leicester. After Leicester, they face Brentford. And after Brentford, they face Arsenal at the Emirates. That's the last game of the season. So it's crazy. Crazy for Everton and Frank Lampard's team. It's crazy for them.
I'll come to the fixtures later. First of all, I've said on this podcast before that, let me repeat myself for people that didn't listen to the previous episodes. Lampard is simultaneously the best Chelsea player and the worst Chelsea coach in the Abramovich era. But I support Lampard with what he has done. Because we remember Lampard came in about a month and a half, 2 months ago, and he was babysitting Everton in the press. He was saying they are working hard, they are trying, the players are doing their best, this, that. But now he has seen that, these guys don't want to learn. So I might as well challenge them. If I'm challenging them in private and they're not doing anything, maybe I should challenge them in the press. Maybe they will have some balls to respond to me on the pitch. But so now we are going to see if they actually do that, because I think Lampard has tried to be lenient and to be nice and all lovey-dovey, but it has not worked out. So I'm not against this stance of actually looking to see what they can do.
Yeah, I think he's trying to force a reaction from them. So we'll see after the
break. But I'm backfire. I'm also aware of that fact. Like, I'm backfire. But I guess it's the life of a coach. You have to take risks. But then, how damaging would this result be for their Premier League running? If Crystal Palace can beat you 4-0, what does that? How much confidence does that knock out of you when you have that kind of difficult running?
It's to take the wind off their sails. But like, at the end of the day, if they can just realize that, oh, it's just the FA Cup and put in the work. And go and play those, because when you look at the games I mentioned, they are not easy games. They face West Ham. West Ham has been a very, very good team since David Moyes took over. So I think the truth is, Everton, they need to be up their game. They need to get victories under their belt, because the fixtures is not kind to them, and there's no let me just be like this. There's no room for error. So I feel like, to answer your question, I feel like they need to just grow up and forget about what happened in the FA Cup and start concentrating on their league, because that is the only way they stay up. If not, they actually set a record. Those players on Frank Lampard, they will set an unwanted record. So, yeah.
How about Liverpool? Liverpool. How is VAR going to tell me that Jota was not offside? And nobody's saying anything. That line was very dubious.
Like I've said it, the lines we see, like this today we see them draw the line from this angle. Tomorrow we see them. There's no consistency in the way they draw the line. So at the end of the day, man, I'm just that I just feel for Nottingham Forest the way they could have been feeling by that kind of goal, kicking them out of the competition. Well, if you can do that to a small team like Nottingham Forest, then I wonder what to tell you.
I'm not going to say anything more than that. If I speak, I'm in trouble, like Mourinho would say. But it was just absolutely pathetic for a whole Liverpool to use that kind of goal to beat Nottingham. Like, let's be serious now. Nottingham Forest, lower league position. That's sad. That's actually sad to see. So, would teams due to now Crystal Palace face Chelsea, and we have the top two in England in the other semi-final. Who are your finalists?
I think it would be Chelsea, obviously, and I think Man City will take it.
Because no quadruple for Liverpool.
Yeah. I feel like the way it would be, I think over the course of two legs, Man City can take it.
No, it's one leg.
It's one leg. I was thinking the semi-final was two legs. No,
it's the League Cup that is two legs.
Okay. I'm confusing it. Apologies. Okay, then if it's one game, I think it can be Liverpool, because Liverpool have more goals in them in a one-game fixture.
Give us stop chickening out of these things. Give us a proper prediction.
Me, I want Man City, but I feel like it's Liverpool that will get it.
Oh, you want Man City? Okay. I don't want anybody, because I'm not a fan of anybody. But I think it will be City, because I think Liverpool beat them in the Premier League the previous week. So they will be out for revenge. And then it's just a week after. So I think City will win the FA Cup semi-final. But Liverpool will win the one that really matters in the Premier League. So that means Chelsea might just be losing 3 FA Cup finals in a row. Well, all the best to them. Since they like celebrating entering finals instead of actually winning finals, they can celebrate entering another FA Cup final and then probably losing. So, congrats to Chelsea and Chelsea fans.
Hey, man. I think Chelsea can... If they meet Liverpool, they'll be out for revenge. If they meet Liverpool, they'll be out for revenge.
Funny how you said that, because remember I told you, I didn't say it on air, but I told you that I had a feeling, like from the moment that the Carabao Cup final entered extra time, before the match even ended, before Liverpool won, I just had a feeling, my mind just told me that this is going to be the Champions League final this season. And then we saw the draws, and then Chelsea and Liverpool are on opposite sides of the draw. So I'm like, was I right? I don't know. Was I right? We'll find out. So, I don't know who will win that final if it happens, but my mind just told me that will be the Champions League final. And then, you know another funny thing? My mind told me it would be Liverpool versus Chelsea, not Chelsea versus Liverpool. And the way the draws are, Liverpool, if they get to the final, they will be the home side and Chelsea will be the away side. So, I might just be an octopus. You know, you can never know. We'll see if I'm right.
Of course,
But then, what do you actually think will happen? This is my mind. This is not even what I think. Like, I'm not even analyzing anything here. This is just what my mind told me. So now, let's analyze it. Which teams do you think will enter the semifinals and then the final?
For the semifinal, I think, what is it called? Chelsea face Real Madrid. If Real Madrid are on full power, I think they can win that game. So, it will be Real Madrid.
My prediction is already out the window if Chelsea don't make it to the semis.
So it will be Real Madrid against Manchester City.
Yep.
Then, obviously, Bayern versus Liverpool.
See, say something. That other side of the draw is an absolute disgrace. How can they give Liverpool Benfica? See, this is nonsense. When they picked, I think I watched the draws live, and I think they picked Benfica or Villarreal, yeah. And I was like, okay, if they don't give Benfica Villarreal now, if they give them Liverpool, I just knew that nonsense was going to happen because I wanted to see proper matches. I know
yes,
the only proper match here is Chelsea Madrid. We actually don't know who is going to win, but we know who's going
even,
to win.
Even the City.
We know who is going to win, guy?
No. This is a different Atleti. I already said the start for you, so it's a different Atleti. So
no going to win.
Well, we'll see. But at the end of the day, I think.
Actually, just said it on your prediction. Okay, so go ahead. Go ahead.
For my final, I already told you this months ago. The what I want to see is Manchester City against Bayern. That is what I want to see. Pressing football against possession based football.
What do you think will happen? Not what you want to see.
Yeah, I think that's what will happen. I think Bayern will be out for blood. Liverpool, because Liverpool knocked them out a few seasons ago, if you remember.
Okay. So for me, it's going to be the only difference between us is in the quarterfinals is I think Chelsea will beat Madrid. Then I think the rest will happen, like you said. So my semi-final lineup will be Chelsea, Liverpool, City, and Bayern. I think City will beat Chelsea in the semi-final. Then I don't know what will happen with Liverpool Bayern. Let me not even lie. I don't know. But then if all Bayern's players stay fit, all their first team players, then it's possible we see Bayern City, like you said. But then I don't want to agree with you, no. I'm going to go Liverpool City.
Of course. Woke man. You want to be woke. Of course.
But then I don't know if I'm even betraying my conscience because my mind told me Chelsea will enter the final. So I don't know.
I think the only thing is stopping Chelsea from going to the final because when you look at the way Chelsea set up, their style of play, is very effective in a cup competition. So the only way Chelsea go out is that they're finishing. If they can get that right, because when you look at it, Havertz, as much as Havertz has been finishing, Chelsea, they're not creating enough for Havertz. Let me be honest. Havertz is just being clinical with what he's having. So if Chelsea can be creating enough chances, then I think Chelsea can beat anybody in that competition because, like I said, Chelsea's style of play is very effective in a cup competition.
Yeah, I think Chelsea are a better cup team than league. Like we've seen in the last few years, FA Cup final. This year looking like another FA Cup final. League Cup finals, Champions League final last season that they won. So cup competitions, you can never write Chelsea off. Now, in the Serie A, the Rome derby was really a walk in the park or a stroll in the park for Roma. Tammy Abraham is now just 2 goals behind Vlahovic in all competitions. Is this guy underrated? Like, nobody is talking about him.
Abraham. We've spoken about Abraham already in our previous episodes, but man, Abraham looks like something else. He's beastly. I think he has 15 Serie A goals now. He's the third highest goal scorer behind Immobile and Vlahovic, who are on 21-21. I even think he can get there. I think Abraham has... I don't know what Mourinho has done to him, but when you look at his link-up play, he drops deep, he links up with the runners, going to the box, wait for the cross, and he's now finishing. He's finishing. It's not like before where his coffee is very rusty. Now he's finishing. He's now very, very clinical, but he's a bit clinical than the way he was before. And I'll be interested to ask a Chelsea fan if they'll be willing to. Because when you look at Abraham has outscored all the Chelsea attacking players this season by double.
By a mile, my guy.
By double. So obviously, some people will tell you, oh, it's the Farmers League, like all those nonsense they talk, because some people believe. Football ends and starts in England. But if we're being realistic, like, I don't know, it'd be interesting to find out from a Chelsea fan if they will accept someone like Abraham back. Because when you look at it, I feel like Abraham can even be the perfect striker for Mikel Arteta's team in terms of build up and finishing. So, you know, Abraham is looking like the top property to have now in Europe. So,
Okay. Chelsea have a buyback clause on Abraham. I think, like I said before, that was smart of them to do because they've seen Salah and De Bruyne come to buy them back countless times. And they didn't want the same thing with Abraham. So, of Abraham going to Arsenal, absolutely no chance. Chelsea will not allow that to happen. But if Chelsea would actually buy him back, the thing is, can you get what you want? Because they want Haaland. But will Haaland go there? I doubt it. So, if they cannot get what they want, which is Haaland, then the next best thing might be Abraham. But then they cannot even buy him now. The buyback clause kicks in end of next season. So then, I don't know if they will have to make do with Lukaku for another year, which is probably not what Chelsea fans want to do. But I don't know. That's their curse. They should carry it. So,
what do you think? Like, there can be a swap deal, Lukaku for Abraham.
That would be foolish of Chelsea. Because if we look at it, Abraham has had one good season in his career. Lukaku has had several. So, for you to swap both of them makes absolutely no sense. What would actually make sense is if you sell Lukaku for like 70 million to like a desperate PSG or whatever, and then buy Abraham back. Maybe you pay an extra 10 million of... I think the buyback clause is 63 million of 65 or something like that. So, if you pay 73... for buying him a year earlier, I think that makes more sense than just outright swapping both of them.
It's still the same thing. Think of it.
No, it's not the same. You see, there's a psychological thing. If you swap both of them, you're putting immense pressure on Abraham. Like, you're giving Lukaku to Roma, and you're like, the pressure on Abraham is going to be massive. But then if you sell Lukaku to a club, separate club, and then buy Abraham as his replacement, there's less pressure on Abraham.
There'll still be pressure on him because he's not coming to a small club. He's coming to Chelsea. Either way, there'll still be pressure on him.
It's like, how will I put it? It's like, which player has left Chelsea and come back, or left the club and come back? Okay, let's say like...
Lukaku is a prime example.
Let's not use Chelsea, but let's just say...
Ronaldo to United.
Yeah, Ronaldo to United, like, there's no pressure. But imagine if, as good as Bruno was now, imagine if Man U had swapped Bruno for Ronaldo. There would have been some Man U fans that would say they don't want, because before Ronaldo came back, Bruno was immense for them. Do you get? So, the whole swap thing for me just puts pressure on players. Don't do swap deals. Just sell your player and buy another one. Simple. Swap deals that helps anybody, really.
Okay. Fair enough. I know before we end, now let me ask you this thing. Remember what we said about the Serie A table? Have you seen the latest standings? Have you seen it?
Sorry, what's your point? I want to know your point before I answer you.
My point now is Juventus might actually finish above title favorite Inter Milan. And Napoli, that I was saying that my bottle this thing are proving me right now. AC Milan are sitting first on the table. And even Roma is behind, you know, Roma is far behind, but I think I don't think Roma's goal should just be getting to Europe next season. I think the Europa League is fair for them. But you know, for Juventus finishing above title favorite Inter, that would be crazy. Remember what you said about Allegri this. Okay. Arrest my case.
Okay, wait. I want to start. Let me start from the top. You are taking credit for Juve almost catching Inter, but I believe your statement was that they will catch Napoli, not Inter. So
you were not
right in that aspect. So don't take any credit. You are not right. Okay. And then the season has not even ended. That's point number one.
So was I right about Allegri telling you that he needed quality players? Hmm?
He was playing football like a dinosaur, be on the left wing. That was never going to work, whatever quality.
Yes, yes, that is true. That was never going to work. But I was telling you that he doesn't have the quality. Keza was injured. All these things hindered what he was trying to do. So I was telling you that this guy, obviously.
Keza was actually fit when he was doing that. And actually, he is still doing it. Rabiot is still being played on the left side of midfield. The only difference now is that you have Vlahovic who is covering up for that nonsense.
The only difference now is... See, let me tell you. When a manager makes decisions like that, you need to look at, like, who is the better option there. Obviously, it's a very stupid decision playing Rabiot as a winger, which I agree with you. But, like, who is now the better option there? The ball has regressed. Who is there? Okay, they loaned Kulusevski to Spurs. Who else is there? So, like, when you look at it realistically, the options for him are very limited. It's not like he has options sitting on the bench. He doesn't want to use it.
So,
this is not even a PC contest. I just want your opinion on it. So, everything is looking nicely, and I think the top four race will be interesting.
So, what I look at is Allegri is not doing, but he's not doing a bad job. He's not doing a great job in the sense that you look at the team, and then this, even if this, you were to start the season from match week one now and go to match week 38, Juventus will still not win the league, even with Vlahovic. So that is why I said, because you look at the team, and then something just looks off. I don't trust the right back. Chiellini is aging, so I don't trust him for an entire season. I don't trust Danilo. I don't trust Cuadrado. Dybala is the most... In fact, Dybala is one of the biggest failures in football this generation, because I expected Dybala to be the heir to the throne of Messi and Ronaldo, and he has been as inconsistent can be. Although he's actually 11th in Juventus all-time scorers, but for me, his talent is more than what he has shown. I don't know if you agree. So when I look at the whole team, I'm not getting carried away or excited, because they will finish in the top four, yes. They might finish above Napoli or Inter, might. But then, it doesn't tell me that they are going to compete for the league next season, because the squad is still not good enough.
Okay, fair enough. But I think for the listeners, I think if you're not watching Serie A, you need to watch it. It's an exciting league, and the top four battle is shaping up, I think. So, yeah, we'll see where Napoli... Whether Napoli puts me right or wrong.
Just before we end, yeah, just shout out to Dortmund, the bottling company that have decided to hand over the Liga to Bayern, because they drew 1-1 with Cologne. I don't understand how you draw with Cologne and you say you are chasing a title. And also, the most overrated manager in the history of football, Mauricio Pochettino, lost 3-0 to PSG. See, I'm done. I'm not even going to analyze the match. I'm tired. I'm sick and tired. And if this is what Manchester United want to bring as their next manager, then they should be my guest. I don't care. And then they will have themselves to blame. But then, just finally, let's just end with this United news. They said there are four people on the short list to be manager, which is, I find, very bizarre, first of all, because how can you be giving us a four-man shortlist? It shows that there's no even plan. They don't know what they want. You should know who you want and go for the person. For me to be hearing there's a four-man shortlist, I already know that the club are not serious. So let me talk about the shortlist. There's Erik ten Hag. There's Mauricio Pochettino. There's Luis Enrique, current Spain boss. And then there is, I'm forgetting the last person now, Julian Lopetegui, which is actually surprising to me. So from those four, pick one. And then before you pick one, I don't know if you shared my sentiment that if shortlist in itself just shows that the club is not serious.
Like, they can have a shortlist of, let's say, similar kind of managers. So in case they can't get one, so I understand. So, but if you and I have a shortlist of different managers that are not of similar profile, and that means
you get that's what I'm looking at it from, because Enrique is tiki taka, and And Enrique is tiki-taka with a bit of pace, like Xavi and Ten Hag. So, Enrique and Ten Hag are the same. Pochettino does not even know what he's doing again. Pochettino is not doing anything again. Lopetegui is more counter-attack than attack. So, there are three different styles of managers in this short list.
Yeah, that's true. But realistically, Enrique, I don't think Enrique will leave the Spain job when it's just how many months before.
Can I just say something? What is Manchester United, the biggest club in the world? Of course, anybody will leave their job to come by the chance of coaching Manchester United. The biggest club in the history of clubs. Come on, DNA FC.
I think realistically, if they know what they are doing, they should go for Ten Hag. And Ten Hag needs to be backed for him to be successful. So if he doesn't get the players that he actually wants, because he needs high level of IQ players that are technically gifted to play that kind of system that Ten Hag played. So if they don't get it, Ten Hag will fail.
When I didn't want Xavi to coach Barcelona, it was because I love Xavi. You understand? I love Xavi.
Of course.
Because I was afraid that the next manager will fail. Remember I said that?
Where I'm
looking at United, I'm afraid that their next manager will fail. And I love Ten Hag. I don't want him to be that next person to fail. Any of the other three can go there and fail. It's not my business. But then,
the only way Ten Hag fails is if he doesn't get the actual profile of players he wants. And speaking about Ten Hag...
Wait. You know why he's not going to get it? You have people who don't... Players. You have people who don't know anything about football.
Fletcher.
You have former bankers who are now the CEO or the whatever of the club. You have Rafanik, who is clueless as an interim manager, now going to carry his cluelessness to another level to be advising.
No, let's not do this. Ralf Rangnick's success has never came out from a manager. We knew him to be successful in terms of what he did with the Red Bull clubs. And those things, he did it upstairs. In the dugout, screaming. That is not his own ability. He was just there as interim. So going upstairs to where he knows where his best, he performed to his best ability there. And I think it's good for
Manchester United. But you know the problem? He's not even going upstairs. He's going outside to be advising, to be shouting from outside. He's not going upstairs. He's going outside to be shouting because...
Only man you can tell us what is consultancy role.
Hey, he's not going to be the director of football. He's going to be a consultant. So he's not even upstairs. That's the problem.
Well, it depends. I think 6 months down the line, if he doesn't get where he wants, I think he works. Like, he works.
No, he cannot work because he signed it. Consultant. It was his contract. What the hell is consultant? What's that? Have you heard that? Have you heard it in football before? Have you heard it?
No, this is the first time I'm hearing of it.
It doesn't make any sense. So he cannot even complain because he agreed to the contract.
All right. This is my headache. Like, that's their business. If they are serious, they know what to do to get to the top.
We'll see if they are serious. Of course, they should be serious. Enrique leaving Spain. Oh my God, what a joke! That's the biggest joke I've heard this week, and I'm waiting for a better one. I'm waiting for a better one. Enrique to leave Spain because of Manchester United. Wow.
Hey man,
thanks for listening, guys. I don't know if Leonard now wants to denounce his lie and say that I actually played against his friend. So Leonard, I leave you to your conscience.
Okay, guys. We have a fantastic episode coming up on Friday. Hope you listen to that as well. Other than that, yeah, have a great rest of the week. We'll see you on Friday. Goodbye for now. We'll be right back.